You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us. On today's podcast, during the worldview segment, Monica and I continue to discuss adoption. We're on part four. And for the main topic, we'd also discuss the path to self-sufficiency. And we talk about things like the spectrum of self-sufficiency and then some various ways that you can achieve it, whether it's learning skills, growing your own food, and things like that. In today's worldview segment, we're continuing our discussion on adoption. This is actually part four of Monica and I discussing our experiences mostly with exclusively with international adoption. So that is our focus. And today what we're talking about is the process. The process is very hard and difficult to navigate. And it kind of leads us into the reiterating the importance of picking a good agency.
Yeah. Because the the process is confusing, to say the least. And if you have never adopted before, you're literally depending on that agency to tell you what the next steps are, what needs to be done, and the time frame that it's going to take between needing things or, you know, once you get this stuff done. We would get something done, and then we'd say, well, how long are we going to wait? You know, when are we going to hear back from them? What's happening?
Right.
We were lost, like, yep, most of the time.
Right. And I think part of that is that the agency itself, and by the way, this seems to be consistent. It's not just the agency that we dealt with, but as we've read and you've read,
yeah,
this seems to be consistent among adoption agencies for whatever reason. I'm sure there's some exceptions out there, but we haven't found them.
Yeah, it's a lack of communication.
Lack of communication and a lack of organization.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's, I think it's just because the people are drawn to this. They do care about adoption and finding homes for children, but they're not necessarily the best managers.
Yeah, well, and again, we've talked about the fact that they have masters in social work. They have masters in, like, counseling or some sort of social something with children, and yet have absolutely no experience in business organization or business communications.
Right.
Maybe they had one class.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So we would contact our agency and go, hey, where are we on this? And in almost every case, it was, well, I'm going to have to get back with you because I'm not sure what's going on with your
situation. Even know where they filed our stuff.
So, yeah, right. It was just a simple, I mean, I'd imagine anything would have been better than what we had for our experience, even if they had a whiteboard on with a family name and then what was the last communication and just a quick gist of their situation.
Yeah, I mean, we would get random emails, some sent to you, some sent to me, some to your work. It was emails all over the place. Nothing was consistent. So you're not going to find a perfect agency.
No.
There isn't one out there. And again, they have hearts for the children. They have hearts for families. Sometimes they've lost that over the years because of the frustration that comes along with
process.
Adoption. Yeah.
And navigating the government regulations. And
right. And they've got to travel. Not only do they have to deal with the United States and their own state laws for adoption, but they also have to have a working relationship with each of the countries.
Yeah.
And so they've got to go to the country. They have to visit with the adoption boards over there, get to know the laws, and form a relationship and get approval for carrying that country. So they've got a lot of things, I get it, that are going on, but it would be nice if the communication and the organization were a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, and it's, you know, again, they're dealing with a lot of different families, but you have, if you're going to be in this business,
yeah,
you have to be organized.
You have
to be
organized.
It's just, you can't leave families hanging,
yeah,
leave children hanging, you know, despite their intent.
Right. So, I mean, how we started out was, fortunately, we had a vague list from our social worker that was going to be doing our home study of exactly what we would need done before she would come in and do our home inspection and do our family, you know, interviews and those types of things, which really were the background checks, the FBI checks. So we had to get our fingerprints done and send that to a special lab.
And we had to get letters of recommendation.
From family, from pastors, work.
Yep. Several of those we needed to get medical evaluations done.
For everybody.
For everyone.
Psychological exams for you and I.
Right. And then
we're normal,
in,
by the way.
In your home. was it 18?
Might have been 16.
16.
Yeah.
That triggered certain things, certain requirements if you have children that are 16 or older.
Yeah.
So that you had to do for them.
They needed background checks and things too.
Right.
18 was FBI, and then 16 was like local checks.
Right.
And
each one of these had their own expiration dates.
Yes.
So you have to keep track of that.
Yes. Well, and the home study is only good for 6 months. So we had, she originally had come in, our social worker had come in and done our home study, but then our medical thing expired and the home inspection expired. So she had to come back in January or February to
do it
again.
Okay, yeah, that's right. There were certain elements of it that would expire.
Yeah.
Right? So that, you have to keep track of all that.
Yeah.
And then the home study leads to the dossier.
Yes. So we finish the home study. Once you get your child, no matter how you do it.
Assigned. Right.
Yeah. Whether you go through the waiting children list or whether you get it assigned from the country. Once you get that, then you're going to basically start the process of immigration. So you have to put in the I-600 for the children. And then you have to send in your dossier to get approved for immigration, to get yourself approved to be a sponsor to immigrate a child.
Right.
And the dossier has all the same stuff in the home study, only you can't use the home study.
Right.
So you need second copies.
So it's obviously a shock to us. And so, yeah, the number of copy, that was frustrating because we would order marriage certificate, birth certificates.
Yeah.
And order
all our background
copies.
Checks.
And then we needed more. So we had to go back through that process again.
Yeah, we weren't told from the beginning, and this is something, if you're going to do an international adoption, get at least 3 copies of everything.
Yeah, just do it.
Because, you know, we were told by our social worker, this is what you need for the home study.
3 marriage certificates, 3 sets of fingerprints, 3 sets of birth certificates for everything.
Well, yeah, but she didn't tell us that.
I know.
She just said, this is what we need. And so we were like, oh, okay. And then when they said, oh, for the dossier, you need all of this plus the home study. And we're like, oh, okay, so we've got that taken care of because all that stuff's in the home study. And they said, oh, no. That was for the agency and for the country. You can't use that for immigration. You need whole new copies. That almost set us back. Like, that was very frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, it could have set us back a couple months. Or not a couple months, but
it could have. I mean,
it's possible.
We pushed things really fast and got things through very quickly,
right.
But The fingerprints, FBI background check, right. was longest, which was 6 weeks.
So the bottom line on the process is you have to be vigilant on those requirements.
Yeah.
You have to determine the actual requirements because that was a challenge too.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it was okay, what do we need to do? And then you would figure out what you needed to do because they told you. So, and then later they'd come up with some more things that you needed to do.
Yeah, it seemed like everything that we were turning in just led to the next thing. Oh, now
you
need this.
Like, what?
It's like, well, why didn't you give us... We didn't get a checklist, really an actual checklist to say, these are the things
that you need. A comprehensive checklist. We got bits and pieces from different areas.
Right. And she said, well, that was in your contract. Well, yes, if you read through the, 50-page contract?
Right.
There was some steps in there.
References to different things, but, you know, there was no comprehensive...
Checklist.
That said, okay, this is the steps you need to take, and in this order.
Yes.
Because, of course, just like the military, you go to someone and go, hey, I need to do this. And they're like, oh, and before you can do that...
You have to do this. Yeah. And that was frustrating. And if we had had that list and said, you need 3 copies of this and 2 copies of that, we would have done that from the very beginning and saved ourselves a lot of heartache. So that's something to be aware of.
Yeah.
Be proactive. Don't always believe that your agency is telling you everything, because they do have a lot of clients. They have a lot of countries they're working with.
Right. They have might have multiple programs for different countries, and therefore different requirements for each one. And then all of that, well, nowadays, all of it will fall under Hague requirements, which adds a whole nother layer of bureaucracy and requirements.
Yes, and money,
and
unfortunately.
Money. Yeah, it's been terrible. The actual adoptions in the United States, international adoptions from Americans who are adopting from abroad, have decreased 60%.
Due to Hague.
Due to the Hague requirements.
And I understand, you know, the whole point of Hague was to decrease
human trafficking,
but it hasn't even accomplished that.
No.
All it has done is decreased adoption.
Yeah. So it's a terrible law or treaty, I should say, brought in by people with great intentions.
Yeah. But not realizing the ramifications of what they were doing.
Terrible.
Yeah.
You know, there needs to be some oversight, obviously. We want to prevent any type of human trafficking, but they've gone too far.
Yeah.
As usual with government.
Yeah, and then unfortunately, it has backed up the immigration process greatly. It used to be, before Hague was in, I think I was reading stuff, it was taking about 2 weeks to 3 weeks to get your immigration for adoption, international adoption, approved. And now it can take months.
Right.
Because it's a huge backlog. Everybody has to go through this Hague process, and you have to have all this particular information. If you're missing anything, it takes weeks to hear back from who is it? Homeland Security or?
USCIS.
USCIS and Homeland Security.
Yeah. So now, again,
to tell you,
you're
missing something.
Involved. In the adoption process.
Yeah.
So I think what we're trying to get at is not to discourage anyone, but to give you a realistic picture, and you have to be motivated.
Yes.
You have to be dedicated to doing this, and you got to plow through it. You've got to get all the requirements, and then just start be just ridiculously diligent in knocking these out.
Well, and I'm going to tell people a couple of things that I did. First, I made a folder that I eventually made my own master checklist. And as they were giving me these little snippets here and there, I was putting it together on paper, printed it out, and put it in a notebook. Then I had all these page protectors in there that had everything in that I needed in order to complete the dossier or whatever it may be. The other is I scanned everything into my computer and had it on a thumb drive. So I have this scanned. So if someone needed a copy of our home study, I'm like,
where we were just,
I can email that to you.
Yeah. We'd get it to them right away. Cause again, every little thing causes delay. And a lot of times those delays are, you know, you start adding weeks.
Yeah.
That adds up fast when multiple delays with multiple weeks can cause a massive delay.
Yeah. So make up for their unorganization by being extremely organized.
Yes.
So if they say, well, we never got this or that, you say, actually, you did, but I have a copy of it.
And I sent it to you on this date.
Yeah. I've got a copy. I can go ahead and scan it to you.
Yeah.
And that will save a lot of time because we did have documents lost.
Yeah.
And that was terrible.
And, you know, you just plow through.
Yeah.
Keep moving. It's just, you know, you got to keep moving.
Yeah. And when you're organized, it makes it less overwhelming because you know what's next, you know what's happening. But again, the agency you pick, if they've worked with that country, they should be pretty equipped to kind of guide you through. Unfortunately, we were the first clients for the Philippines with this particular agency, so
so
it was a ride, it was an adventure.
That's right, it wasn't a
nightmare,
it was an adventure. On today's podcast, I'm here with Monica, and we're talking about the path to self-sufficiency. Now, this is really near and dear to our hearts. This is one of the main aspects of what we're trying to do out here is to gain some self-sufficiency. But I think it's important to define a couple of terms so that we understand what we're talking about. Self-sufficiency is the ability to supply one's own needs without any external assistance. So, with that being said, we have kind of a spectrum of self-sufficiency, right?
Right. Yeah. We have all the way from you are completely and utterly married to the system.
Right.
You rely on the grocery store. You know that when you flip a switch, the electricity is going to turn on. And
somebody changes your oil.
Somebody changes your oil. Someone, yeah, takes care
you
of all the maintenance.
You do nothing yourself.
Right.
Okay, and again, our point here is not to disparage anyone for that, but that's just to kind of define our parameters. So, yes, on the far left of the scale or the spectrum is what we call consumerism.
Yes.
I mean, it's just like pure, you are on the corporate conveyor belt, and you are a cog in the machine.
Right.
Okay. That's the
Which
far
we've
left.
Been there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We've totally been there.
Yeah.
We've been the cog.
We have been the cog. And then our path is now diverging, and we're working hard to get off of that conveyor belt onto a new path. And we've made some significant strides in that area. So that's what why we want to share with you a lot of this and to hopefully help you get off of that conveyor belt and then onto this path.
You know, I just have to say something totally off subject for just a second. And I think it's interesting that we use the word conveyor belt versus path.
Yes.
Because conveyor belt, it's like you stand on it and it just moves you along. And you're a passive receiver of whatever comes along with literally no decisions to make. You're just riding the conveyor belt. Then there's the path, which requires you to make the movement,
right,
to take each individual step.
Yep.
Nobody is helping you along. And that really is like more self-sufficient.
That's right.
You know, conveyor belt versus the path.
That's good. And the conveyor belt is a mechanical contraption and the path is natural.
Yes.
Very cool.
It's the place we're supposed to be.
Right. So we talked about that. On the far left is this idea of the corporate cog in the wheel, consumerism, which of course is just the increasing consumption of goods, a significant problem in America. And in fact, we just had Black Friday.
Yeah. I you know what? I missed it. I forgot that it existed, literally.
Wow, that's
awesome.
That is awesome. You know, and just to be fair, you know, a lot of the footage that we see of people trampling each other for, you know, a 50% discount on electronic, that's not what's happening everywhere. We know that. And those are probably extreme examples. But still,
yeah.
You know, one day after giving thanks for what you already have, people are trampling each other.
To get more.
To get more.
Yeah. I've only been Black Friday shopping a couple of times in my life because I absolutely hate crowds.
Yeah.
And I didn't deal with any of that kind of thing. I did see people like pulling and tugging on you, like
politely,
the last Elmo or something. But what I did bump into was lines so long that you really have to tag team. Like you got one person who's out doing shopping, one person standing in line, and they switch. And even after both of them get done shopping and someone has been in line the whole time, you're not even to the checkout yet. That's insane.
Yeah. And it's good to be done with that.
I'm so done.
Yeah. Yeah. To be frank about it. You know, we're so sucked in by the lure of the deal,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's some good deals on Black Friday, but it's usually over stuff we don't need.
Right. And say it's only a good deal if something's on sale that you actually need.
Right.
Not that you go, ooh, it's on sale. I want to have that.
Right. Now, okay. So getting back to our subject, on the left-hand side of that spectrum is, again, that corporate tool, okay, we'll call that corporate tools standing on the conveyor belt. And then on the far right side of that spectrum is what we would call off-grid living.
Mm.
So what is that?
Off-grid.
Yeah.
That you don't even embrace any of the modern conveniences that are offered today. So you don't have internet. You know, you're not just going, oh, I'm going to use solar to give me energy so I have electricity and I've got internet and my telephone and you're rejecting all of that.
Right. So it's, you know, where we think of off-grid living, if you just think of that term, off-grid living, most people, they still want all the modern conveniences.
Right.
Okay, which is fine. And we're going to talk about that here in a minute. But they want all the modern conveniences. They want to be able to flip the switch and the lights come on. They're just not connected to the grid, the power grid. And they may use less power because they've got, you know, they're using alternative energy or, you know, whatever the case. So that's off-grid living. Off-grid living rejects even that.
Yeah.
They don't even necessarily want all the modern conveniences. They're rejecting that. So we would think of, and again, not in a bad way here, but we would think of like the Amish.
Yeah.
Or we think of the person who literally lives out in a cabin in the mountains of Tennessee. They're growing some of their own food. They're hunting or fishing. And they are living off the land without any connection to the grid.
Yeah, they're using candles for light.
Right.
And not worrying about what's going on in the rest of the world.
Exactly. Okay, so that kind of defines this spectrum. And in our, when we say our path to self-sufficiency, that does not mean that we hope to end up on the far right side of the spectrum. When we don't,
no.
Honestly.
I like modern conveniences.
Sure. There's nothing wrong with technology. Technology can be used for both good and evil.
Yeah.
And modern conveniences are great. There's some trappings with modern conveniences.
There are.
And there are certainly a lot of trappings with consumerism and that. So that's kind of the spectrum. Our goal is probably somewhere right of center, getting towards that off-grid living.
Yeah.
But even then, you know, we have propane and things like that.
And we have electricity.
And we have grid power.
Yeah.
Now we could function without that grid power.
We could.
We could function. It'd be hard.
Yeah.
But we could do that. We have the means to do that here via some secondary methods of heat and cooking and all those kinds of aspects. Okay, so now we're going to talk about some milestones. And I think we both agree that the first milestone has to be to renew your mind or change your thinking.
Yeah, I think that with our lifestyles today, that many times we get so caught up and so busy with what we're doing that we literally don't even know what we truly believe, or we're not living it out because we've never sat down to evaluate it.
Right. And I think just like you said, we are extremely busy.
Yeah.
And that's part of it. And we'll get into that. It's another milestone, is you have to free up your schedule.
Yeah. So really the first step in order to renew your mind, you need to sit down and figure out, what are my values? And, you know, not only inside myself, but what does God call us to do? And, you know, we go through scripture and we know, I mean, he says not to love money, not to love all of these things.
Do not be conformed to the world.
But be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Right. That our primary focuses should be relationships, and it should be drawing out and pulling away from all of the temptations that the world has to give us, so that instead of using our energy for that, we can use our energy to build relationships and share the gospel and to bless our families. So just evaluating, what are my values and what do I believe? And then live in line with those things, make decisions that will get us closer to that, so you're not laying awake at night going, how did I spend my day today? And why am I not feeling rested? Or why am I not feeling...
Why am I restless? Why am I...
Yeah, stressed.
Sleepless.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I like to say, and I know that it's a little bit... It's not as simple as this, but that your true beliefs are shown in your actions.
Yeah.
And that is true to some degree, but I think it's important to talk about that.
Well, okay, so this is something that you and I do agree with that, because I believe that we do live out. We say, oh, I think this is important, but
right,
that we don't
say
live
one
that
thing
way.
And our actions say another thing.
Yeah.
Our actions are what we truly believe.
Right. But I think that there's something to be said with what we were talking about earlier with the conveyor belt. That sometimes we literally haven't even figured out what we believe. We haven't even tried to determine anything. We're on a conveyor belt. We're moving along. And it just seems like everything's happening to us,
right,
rather than us making decisions or determining things. And it's been that way since we were little.
Right. That's true. And, you know, honestly, we didn't know that we were on a conveyor belt until now that we're off the conveyor belt.
Right. Yeah.
And we couldn't even see that we were on that conveyor belt.
Right. And I, with all of the advertisements and all of the inputs we have, getting pushed to do things, it seems natural. It's like, oh, I need that. Oh, we need to go do that. Oh, the cool people are doing that, so we need to do that.
Right.
Because we need to be cool.
And just get bombarded.
Yeah.
Just continuously bombarded with all the stuff you never knew you needed. Until you saw it.
Until you saw it.
Now, that's one thing. Okay, so obviously, you know, on our path to self-sufficiency, we are nowhere near where we want to be, although we've made great strides.
Yeah.
But we, you know, we go to Costco, for example, and that place.
Oh.
I never knew I needed so many things till I go to Costco.
I know.
So, I mean, we're still susceptible to this.
It's true. The last time I went to Costco, I made out my plan. Like, I knew what I was going to get, and I beelined it back there. But I tell you what, I passed by some socks, some wool socks that I just had to have, you know. And I'm sure that, well, they come in really handy. But as I'm passing things and I'm trying to stay focused, I'm seeing all this cool stuff. And I'm like, wow, I never knew that I needed that until I saw it. All of a sudden, I have a hole in my life.
Exactly. That's
why it's so much better not to go anywhere.
True. I mean, no, there is some truth in that. It's how I am when I go to Black Sheep Sporting Goods. Wow. It's a hunter's and shooting enthusiast's dream place. But anyway. But yeah, no, so staying out of that is part of it.
Yeah. Well, like you said earlier.
Kind of removing yourself.
Your first self-defense
principle is to avoid dangerous people
and places.
And it certainly applies on this path to self-sufficiency. It's a spiritual lesson, but it's also a practical, hey, if you're trying to do things like get out of debt and become more self-sufficient, well, you want to avoid those places.
Yeah. And, you know, as a woman, one of the things I know Scripture tells us is to be home, to be keepers of the home, to be at home, to not be flitting from house to house, to not be constantly busy and out visiting friends and all of that, because it does take away from the time that you can utilize to make food from scratch or do different things like that. That helps because you're not getting out of the house as frequently and you're staying focused.
Yeah, that's true. Now, so we talked about this milestone in the first one being the most important and the first one, which is obviously to renew your mind or change your thinking.
Yeah.
So you have to really change your thinking. You have to recognize that, even if it's recognizing, hey, you know what, I'm on the conveyor belt right now.
Yeah.
That's a huge step.
Yeah.
And that's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you recognize the issue.
You've got a problem. Admit you've got a problem.
You can admit it. Hi, my name is Sean, and I am on the conveyor belt. Okay, so that's the first milestone. And then there's many different ways to make steps towards self-sufficiency. But the next milestone or one of the next milestones,
at least for us, like we think so.
Yeah, for us would be what?
Get rid of cable.
And part of that, the bigger principle there is to reduce the amount of inputs
yes.
that are coming in. And
yes.
That's a huge one because not only is it a time thief,
yes.
that I like to call the TV, because we, you know, again, we're susceptible and we get sucked into those things.
I know.
The time thief comes in, but you're bombarded with not only the advertisements and all the things you never knew you needed, but a lot of garbage as well.
Yeah. Stuff that's just not even good for your mind to be dwelling
right.
on.
Right. So this, why is this a milestone? I mean, this is a very practical thing. It is, it's money saver.
Yep.
It's a time saver.
Yep.
But there's some important things with that, like replacing that time with something positive.
Yeah, you can't leave a gap because you will eventually want to fill that gap back up with what you were addicted to, which, I'm sorry, television is an addiction.
It is.
And it can become a serious problem to some people.
Yeah.
And video games, things like that. I mean, they've even done studies about TV, that as you watch it, you go into almost a trance-like state that draws you into a state of vulnerability where you're accepting a lot of messages that are coming without evaluating them for their worldview. And as Christians, we shouldn't just be filling up our minds and our children's minds with information without it being evaluated first. So from a Christian perspective and from just the mind perspective, we shouldn't be exposing ourselves or our children to that on a continual basis.
Sure.
And if we could use that same time for something useful.
Right. So check this out. This is the New York Daily News, and it says the Americans spend an average of 34 hours a week watching TV.
Wow.
This is according to the Nielsen numbers.
34 hours. That's almost a full-time job.
It is almost a full-time job. And if you think about you know, the fact that when you're watching TV, it's you're passive.
Yeah.
You're just, like you said, you almost become a drone. You're just input and receiving.
Right. You're a passive receiver of whatever they choose to feed you. Instead of using that time learning valuable skills or the children pursuing an interest in something. I mean, you know, teaching people to sew or even to repair their clothing rather than...
Well, what about the people who would say, like, if I immediately cut off cable, my kids would freak out?
I don't know. I think as a parent, you need to make decisions that are hard sometimes in your home. You can do it one of two ways. You can either slowly decrease the television time over a couple of months, or maybe you just cut out some of your premium channels and you go down to your basic cable and you cut the hours, and then the following month you say, okay, we're going to cut down hours even more. And then the third month you cut it completely, or you just go cold turkey. I mean, you know, there's going to be an adjustment period no matter how you do it.
Yep.
I know for you and me, we didn't have cable very long. We had it for, I guess, about 6 months at that time.
About Virginia?
Virginia?
Yeah.
I think
so.
We just cut it cold turkey.
Right.
We just did it.
Because we realized that, oh, we're starting to watch a little bit more.
Yeah.
A little bit more.
Every month it was a little bit more. Because while we were watching the show, they'd advertise another show and be like, oh, that looks interesting.
Yeah.
The next thing you know, we were totally wasting time.
Right.
And spending that $60 a month or whatever on cable.
Right. Now, how about replacing cable with Netflix and Hulu and those types of services?
Well, again, that's fine. As long as it's not replacing the hours.
Yeah.
You go, okay, let's get rid of cable. We're spending too much time.
34 hours a week. We can't do that. Let's spend 34 hours a week on Netflix.
Right. The next thing you know, you're still watching five hours a day, 7 days a week.
You know, and that's not uncommon. I mean, you know, if you think about the person, and this happens quite a bit. The guy who comes home from work, turns on the TV, and watches it until he goes to bed.
Yeah. Yeah, or the kids that get up Saturday morning and turn on the television, and they spend hours watching it. They come home from school.
Right.
They have a snack, maybe they get their homework done, and then they're watching television or playing video games for the rest of the night.
Right. So the bigger thing, though, is reducing the amount of, I guess, electronics time. So that you can't replace the TV with video games. And
You know. And as a mom, I can appreciate that, especially if you've got kids who are addicted to television or video games, and they're used to playing it. Well, according to this,
4 hours a day, 5 hours
a day, you're probably going to go a little bit crazy in the beginning because the kids haven't learned to entertain themselves in any other way apart from electronics.
Right.
So you've got to guide them, help them, give them ideas, give them projects.
Be prepared for boredom.
Yeah. And you know what? Give them some work.
Yep.
That's okay. You know, it's like, oh, you're bored. Great. I've got some carrots that need to be peeled.
Yeah, nobody says they're bored in our house.
No, never.
Because they always get work.
They get work.
They've learned that if they say they're bored, they are going to be put to work.
Yeah, I've got windows that need
to be
washed.
So we don't have anybody who's bored.
Never. There's never a problem with boredom.
Right. So as long as the parents are, they have to prepare for this.
Yes.
I mean, this is a hard transition. It really is.
It is.
And so it's not easy, and you need to be prepared to give your kids productive things to do and channel their energy and time somewhere else.
Yeah. And, you know, get them outside. Getting that energy outside and getting that fresh air will really help grow their minds and help pull them away from the addiction of television. Because if they're sitting in the living room, their natural responses, because they've done it for so long, are going to be turn on the TV.
Right.
Why is the TV not on?
Yep.
You know, I need to be watching something. So it's just like smoking or anything else when you're trying to quit. You don't do the same activities that led to your smoking or to your drinking in the first place. You stay away and do something different.
Right. And TV is very effective in that manner as far as advertisements and those things. I mean, how many of us can repeat some jingle from something, some advertisement in the 80s?
Yeah, or even the 70s, for goodness sake.
Whatever. You know, it's just, they're very catchy and you know, when they're designed that way.
Yeah.
So it's very effective, and that's why a lot of times your kids can't remember that you told them to take the garbage out, but they can, you know, sing the commercial no problem to you.
Yeah, they could, like, probably draw the logo.
Yeah, yeah. I saw a I saw a meme the other day that said that the average child in America can recognize 1,000 corporate logos but cannot walk into a forest and identify 10 plants, animals, or trees. Today's scripture comes from the book of Romans, chapter 3, verses 23 and 24. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, and are justified by His grace as a gift through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus. This concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. Please visit us on our website, thecourageouslifepodcast.com. We'd appreciate any comments or questions that you have. And also like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.